Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can bet on absolutely anything. If you want to bet on UConn, or North Carolina fans can get in on this year to bet them to win the title, all the way down to teams like Stetson and Longwood to win the title. You can even bet individual seeds to win the title. You can bet anything on DraftKings for the tournament. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Friday, everybody. We're actually releasing this on Saturday, but we're recording it on Friday, which is very important for the standings that we're going to be discussing today. We're having the guys from Nerd Sesh on, a show I'm very, very excited about. We're going to do a deep dive into the play-in tournament in both conferences. I'm going to give you guys some numbers just based on the strength of schedule and where teams are in the standings. Then we'll have a little bit of a discussion on where we expect things to land and where we hope things to land. After that, we're going to do a little bit of a touch on the contenders at the top of the league. And then after that, I have a fun game for the nerds at the end of the show where we're going to go over some of my favorite bad takes from this season. So this a little bit of an early start for you guys this morning. You Gen Zers, I could tell you're a little sleepy. I can see it in your eyes, yeah. Carson. I could see it in the energy.
Well, I'm getting over a sickness, Jason. I'm getting over a sickness. That's a bit insensitive of you.
Anyway, we're going to start out in the Western Conference. So as a quick synopsis, we have kind of three tiers in the West play-in tournament. The Pelicans are currently at the 5 seed. They are at 27 losses after a loss last night to the Orlando Magic. Also, Brandon Ingram hyperextended his knee. He's going to be out at least 2 weeks, heading into a pretty tough stretch of their schedule as well. They are at 27 losses, ninth toughest remaining schedule, 52% opponent winning percentage. Then we have the Mavericks, the Suns, and the Kings. They're all tied with 29 losses, so two more than the Pels. The Mavs have a 48% opponent winning percentage in their remaining schedule, which is the ninth easiest. The Suns, 57.4% toughest remaining in the entire league. And then this, the Kings at 56% opponent win percentage is the third toughest remaining schedule in the league. So Suns and Kings, both really tough schedules. Probably worth mentioning, though, that this time of year, the toughness in the schedule, a lot of it has to do with where it's loaded, because once you get into that last week or so, even some of the top teams in the league start sitting guys. Then we go to the Warriors and the Lakers at 32 losses, so three behind the Mavericks, Suns, and Kings, both of them at 32, 17th and 18th toughest remaining schedules, respectively, with a 48% opponent win percentage. So let's get started here. We'll start with you, Carson. What is your best guess for how the standings land from here in the play?
So I think that we're probably going to end up with the four teams who are currently in the play and still in the play. And a little bit boring, maybe. I think that the Pelicans are in some risk of falling now that they don't have BI, but they've honestly played pretty well without him this year. And he's had a really good season, so I don't want to diminish what he brings: scoring, playmaking, improved defense. But they're 4-2 without him. I still think they maintain that really elite defensive identity no matter what. And they've gotten a really good version of Zion lately. So I think just for this very short stretch with the advantage they have in the standings, they can probably hold on. But then with the Kings and the Suns, I just think they do have really tough schedules, as you laid out. Specifically Phoenix, I mean, it's ridiculous. They have games remaining versus the Nuggets. They have two left versus New Orleans, which is maybe a little bit easier without BI, but that's still a tough, physical, defensive-minded, talented basketball team. Cleveland, the T-Wolves twice, the Clippers twice, and then the Kings. I just don't think they've consistently shown a high enough level defensively, a high enough level in terms of effort, for where I'm like, yeah, they're going to overcome being a couple games back from New Orleans and climb up with that sort of schedule in front of them. And then I do still think the Lakers Warriors end up in 9-10. They may have a bit of an advantage in terms of schedule, and I may think that both these teams are better than their record. There's no question about that. And with the Lakers specifically, we've seen the ceiling that they're capable of reaching when they just reach the requisite effort level. But I just think they've kind of dug themselves too deep a hole at this point. And I think that we've seen with the Warriors, again, they've obviously risen to a higher level, but if they were able to just magically flip a switch and then start reeling off a whole bunch of regular season wins, I think that they probably would have done so before getting to this point, where now they are just a few games above 500 and they have been in that 9-10 range for so much of the season. So I think that we're still headed for Lakers Warriors in the 9-10.
I agree for the most part. I think if we're going to see a team fluctuate between where they are right now, I think it would probably be Dallas either climbing to 5 or 4 over the Pelicans or Clippers. But yeah, I think the bottom four teams are going to stay the same. And the thing about the schedule too, the Suns have one hell of a road stretch here. Their next five games are all on the road. That's really tough to endure. And like two games against San Antonio, any game against Wemby, I feel like, isn't just a wash. You know what I mean? It's always a tough out. So I would probably take Sacramento to lock up 7-8. And then I agree with you, man. I just think the Lakers and Warriors are in too big of a hole. And if any of those teams, I'm not predicting this by any means, if either of those teams slip up, I mean, Houston has been surging, dude. Seven straight wins. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't pick them to leapfrog or get in there, but the Warriors and Lakers fall asleep at the wheel for a couple of games, and the last week of the season could get really grimy for both of those teams.
Yeah, again, like that last, when you get into the end stretch, it's when you run into the issue with teams starting to rest guys. So like even looking at the Warriors, Lakers, the Warriors are heading into a little bit of a tough stretch of their schedule as well. They play the Timberwolves and the in the Orlando Magic in the next couple of games. Tonight they play the Pacers. Specifically, they have, you know, Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard in Indiana. Now, Steph shot him out of the building when they played in Indiana about a month ago. But that's a tough perimeter matchup. Then you go to Orlando. They have one of the best guard defenders in the league in Jalen Suggs. You go to, obviously, Minnesota's professional, you know, perimeter defense team. Those types of teams have typically given the Warriors some issues. And the Lakers, while they're about to head into a tougher schedule in a little bit, they're in a little bit of an easier stretch right here. So, like, I actually think that it's more likely than not that the Lakers end up at 9 and the Warriors end up at 10. I agree with you guys as it pertains to the play-in. I think we're going to get Mavs and Pelicans out of the play-in. That it's a risk with the Pels because they're in a little bit of a tougher stretch, and obviously B.I. being out, and he's been so, so good for them on both ends of the floor as of late, sliding really nicely into that secondary role behind Zion as they've kind of shifted. And then also just everything he's been doing defensively, which has been one of the better defensive seasons of his career. And so, like, obviously there's some risk there, but the same reason why I don't think the Pelicans will drop is the same reason why I don't think the Lakers and Warriors will pass the Suns or the Kings. It's the same reason why I don't think the Houston Rockets will pass the Warriors or the Lakers. It's just, that three losses is just way too much to make up in this short period of time. Like, again, like, to put it simply, imagine like a 15 game sample and you went and you happened to go, you know, 12-3. They would only have to go, 9-6 to hold their ground, right? So, like, it's not that difficult to hold that ground over that period of time. And again, you're going to get into that final week and it's going to be a lot of automatic wins. Who do you guys think has the best chance to survive the play-in tournament between the Lakers and the Warriors? Let's start with you, Logan.
Man, I've flip-flopped between this all season long, and I've wanted to sell my stock since the start of this season when I picked the Lakers to win the title. I really want to take Golden State, guys. I really want to take Golden State, and I think they have improved immensely over the back half of this season with Draymond Green returning, with Chris Paul being such a steadying force off the bench, with the emergence of rookies like Brandon Podziemski and Trayce Jackson-Davis. I can't sing TJD's praises enough, man. That kid is awesome. I just can't bring myself to take Golden State. Jason, you did a breakdown a couple of days ago about Steph and their reliance on him offensively, and that's really what it comes down to me. I just think the Lakers have more secondary shot creation, more guys that can pull their weight on any given night. You know, I think the Lakers are really well equipped to withstand an off night from a LeBron James, an off night from an Anthony Davis, because they have D'Angelo Russell, because they have Austin Reeves, because they have these other guys that can pull their own weight and create their own shots offensively. And then you get into the fact that we always harp on the Lakers' physical and athletic advantages. It's just something I can bank in on more. I really want to say Golden State. I think Golden State is the more aesthetically pleasing team. They're more fun to watch, in my opinion, but that's not what it comes down to. I think the Lakers still have those physical and athletic advantages, and there's just more shot creation up and down the roster. Also, you add in the fact that, I don't know, man, I think this team has a legit chip on its shoulder. They still got LeBron James. I still think that when this team – it was ironic because last year, right, guys, it was like the Lakers at any given night in the playoffs would just boot a game, and they'd say – you know what? We'll just win tomorrow night. We'll punt on this game. We'll win tomorrow night. I still have that feel with this Lakers team where I think that if they really want to crank the dial up in intense environments, in big game scenarios, I think the Lakers will show up. So it pains me to say it because I've been trying to offload my Lakers stock for so long, but I will side with LA, and I want to take Golden State, man. I want to see Golden State get it done. I'm rooting for that, but my gut says LA is going to get through.
Well, I think that when we're answering this question, we have to start with the fact that this is likely going to be the 9-10 matchup. So first, somebody has to survive this specific game. And that's where I think the answer becomes relatively clear. I just think the Lakers are a brutal matchup for Golden State. I think that we saw that in the playoff series last year. Of course, this is a different Warriors team. It's a younger Warriors team. It's a more athletic Warriors team. But the ultimate insurmountable advantages that the Lakers had last year, to me, were the fact that they had the two superstar talents on the floor, the two guys who could be top 10 players throughout a series, and the Warriors only had the one, that being Steph Curry, and they are very overwhelmingly reliant on him as that lone star shot creator. Shout out to Kuminga and what he has done as a mismatch attacker, weaponizing his athleticism out of the post in transition. He's been so good. But there's still obviously a gap. And I think in that playoff environment, he needs to prove that he can sustain this level. And so that's a real advantage, that the Lakers are just going to have two guys on the floor who are head and shoulders above everybody else except for Steph Curry at all times. I do prefer their secondary shot creation, as Logan laid out. I mean, especially with the level that we've been getting from D'Angelo Russell. I don't want to be the guy who banks on D'Lo because obviously he melted down against the Nuggets last year, and he is just kind of inherently erratic because of his shot selection, because he relies on those tough pull-ups, and he can take the offense out of rhythm when it's not falling. But he is playing at a level that we haven't seen from him in quite some time. I mean, has just been so impressive for this last month plus now. And so I'm at least optimistic about what he can bring in stretches, what Austin Reeves brings in stretches. And so I think it comes down to a combination of two of the three best players by far on the floor in this series. Overall, athletic and really massive size advantages. Like, Anthony Davis is just a brutal matchup for the Warriors. We saw that last year in terms of how he was able to dictate the series defensively. Kevon Looney did a really good job of battling him on the glass, but he still ate up boards in that series, was over 14 a game, I believe. And I love TJD, and he is balling out. But the Lakers just don't have a physical answer for Anthony Davis. They didn't have a center who was athletic enough last year. Now they do have an athletic center in TJD, but he's still undersized for that matchup. And if you get dialed in AD, he's just a problem. And he's really a problem against a small team like Golden State. So even though I love how the Warriors have turned the corner overall in the second half of the season, and I think that they have been rejuvenated by this young core and they're doing a lot of good things, LA specifically is just a really tough matchup if LeBron and AD are going to hit that top gear.
Yeah, I look at it like this. When Vanderbilt's out, I think they're pretty much on similar footing as teams. And honestly, like, I really do feel like even if they're healthy, which, by the way, Jovan Buha came on the show yesterday and reported that Jared Vanderbilt is going to return this season. Or not that he's going to, but that it's far more likely that he's going to return this season. So even with that allowed, I think I'd pick the home team between those two regardless. Like, I would have a hard time picking against Steph at home in a single elimination game. That said, I think when Jared Vanderbilt's healthy on the Lakers, I think the Lakers are just better than the Warriors. I think he's that when he's out of the lineup, that specific position group is such a devastating weakness for the Lakers that Steph can get comfortable all game long, and that's a real problem. Like, literally, Austin Reeves draws the Steph assignment when Jared Vanderbilt's out of the lineup, and we've seen how that's been a problem. But with Vanderbilt healthy, they're just more built for that sort of thing. That said, I still think just with the way the schedules are set up, even though they have similar remaining strength of schedule, the Lakers' tougher parts of their schedule are later on, whereas the Warriors' tougher parts of the schedule are earlier on. And I think that that benefits LA. They also have a head-to-head matchup on April 9th where the Lakers will be at home, which I think is an advantage towards the Lakers. So even though, again, I think you'd be foolish to count Steph out, I think if Golden State did get the 9 seed, I would lean towards picking them to win that 9-10 game. I just think it's more likely than not that the Lakers win the 9 seed. And if Jared Vanderbilt is healthy, I think the Lakers have a better chance of winning a road game in Oracle than the Warriors have a chance of beating the Lakers in Crypto.com Arena in the event that they're the 10 seed. So I think I lean towards the Lakers there. As far as the 7-8 matchup goes, I really like the Kings are definitely a tougher matchup for the Lakers than either the Suns or the Kings are for the Warriors. So in a weird way, I actually give the Warriors a slightly better chance should they beat the Lakers to get out of that 7-8 matchup. But the one, the one thing that I keep pointing to with the Lakers as a you know, kind of like an optimistic sign for them as a play-in team is that they do not rely on variance nearly as much as the other teams around the league. The Warriors are a high volume jump shooting team. The Lakers are not. The Lakers are one of the lowest volume 3-point shooting teams in the league. They are one of the most frequent paint scoring teams in the league. They have an ability to scale up in terms of their physical in position when they get into those matchups. A big example for me would be like game 6 last year, Lakers at home. They get their butt kicked in game 5. Now, as Logan pointed out earlier, that's kind of was their theme last year, is they would just punt specific games. But in that game 6, what happened? LeBron came out in the first quarter and was like, I'm bigger and stronger than all these dudes, and for one night, I can bury them all in the rim. And he went out and he did that. And so, again, like I think when we really zoom in on it, both teams have a decent chance. But I'd say I give the Warriors a little bit less than a 50% chance of escaping the play-in, and the Lakers a little bit more than a 50% chance. And so I'd lean towards the Lakers. So one last note on that before we head out to the Eastern Conference play-in. If you're the Lakers, and we're going to do both of these rapid fire, so we'll go through both of you and then we'll go to the Warriors. If you're the Lakers, who's the one team you want to avoid in a road play-in game? Let's start with you, Carson.
I think it would have to be Dallas if they're in this conversation. I mean, they're on the fringes of the play-in. I just think the Lakers still have a physical advantage in the front court there, but it has diminished from what would have been overwhelming earlier in the year. We've seen Dallas improve so much as a rebounding team, just improve their overall big situation. And then I just think the offensive ceiling that they have with Luka and Kyrie when they're going, it can be really overwhelming. And so I just think they're the scariest team. The Kings have been a tough matchup specifically for the Lakers with the quickness of their guards and the whole Sabonis AD battle. But I still like the Lakers in that matchup. So it's definitely Dallas to me.
If Dallas Logan is in the conversation, I'd say Dallas. Sacramento doesn't scare me if I'm LA. Phoenix doesn't scare me if I'm LA. I don't really consider, I have enough confidence in Dallas getting out of the, you know, Final Four. So I would take Golden State, honestly. Like, and that's what I want to emphasize. I don't want to count out Golden State by any means. Like, if Steph does go crazy in a one game scenario, and Clay is still a swing factor in a one game scenario where if he's hitting big shots and his shot is on, he is the kind of guy that can swing a single game, right? If Anthony Davis has an off night shooting, like, there's a recipe for Golden State to win a game. Because I consider Dallas kind of out of this conversation, I would definitely say that I lean LA, but Golden State still scares the hell out of me if I'm LA, man. They've got all the recipe, you know what I mean? And we've seen it before. So Golden State still terrifies me if I'm Los Angeles.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense that I think a road game in Dallas or Golden State would both be issues for the Lakers. Really, a road game against any of those teams, I think, for the Lakers would be tough. They've got a lot of young players, and they really depend on their role players playing well, which is scary in those types of environments. I still lean the Kings as the scariest Lakers matchup, and it really is this simple to me. Like, I think LeBron and AD would be able to scale up physically against Dallas. I think they'd be able to scale up physically against Golden State. Meaning, what I mean by that is, like, I don't think PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford or PJ Washington and Derek Lively are going to be able to hold up well under a LeBron James, Anthony Davis onslaught in a single elimination game. That the Kings, the Kings are a bad defense, but they have defensive strengths, and they've had moments this year where they've been a really good defense. And the Kings' two defensive strengths both play specifically into Laker offensive weaknesses, which is the Lakers' guards struggle against ball pressure, good physical ball pressure, and the Kings have a ton of quickness at the guard position to cause those sorts of problems. And secondly, Anthony Davis is an inconsistent over-the-top shot maker, and Sabonis is quicker and stronger than him. So you can beat him to spots and force him to make shots over the top. Some nights Anthony Davis makes all his hooks and jumpers, and some nights he just can't make them to save his life, and that can be a problem. And then on the other end of the floor, it's just a simple matter of, like, I actually like the Lakers against over-the-top shot makers, which is your Luka, your Kyrie, obviously looking at even the Suns guys, even looking at the Clippers guys, even looking at the Thunder guys. Like, the Lakers have done really well this year defensively against teams that rely on over-the-top shot making because they have good positional defenders that can get contests on shots. And because the Lakers do so much damage in the paint on the other end of the floor, it brings a physical wear and tear element that can sometimes lead to jump shots missing. I've seen a lot of complaints from people who don't like the Lakers this year being like, oh, they got lucky, this team missed shots. Oh, they got lucky, this team missed shots. And they don't realize it keeps happening because the Lakers play bully ball, and that can have a wear and tear effect on the game. Whereas, like, with the Kings in particular, obviously De'Aaron Fox is having a great pull-up shooting year. Obviously, we know Malik Monk can hit pull-up jump shots. Obviously, we know Harrison Barnes and Keegan Murray and Kevin Huerter and these guys can shoot. But the primary driving force behind their offense is actually a downhill force element. It's De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk. It's Domantas Sabonis and his power game. So, like, they're a team that I think plays more directly into the Lakers' weaknesses on both ends of the floor. All right, quickly, Warriors, starting with you, Logan. Who's the one team you want to avoid if you're the Warriors?
Ironically, it's LA. I think that matchup is going to be a battle. I think that they just match up really well against each other. Like Carson said earlier, I don't think Golden State has an answer for AD. It's like, you know, I think at the top of the draft, we were doing prospect breakdowns the other day. It's like, they don't have a big Zoo. They don't have a Hardenstein. They don't have a Robinson. And like just having a big kind of a big body, I think if Golden State could somehow swing it, like a Donovan Clingan or somebody like that, like an immediate impact big body center would be really effective, I think, for a team like Golden State, where you could run different types of defensive coverages. You just have a, you know, you just have a physical answer, a guy that just matches up well against any big body. And Golden State has not had that with Looney slightly tailing off this year. You know what I mean? He's not the same guy that he once was. I think they could get physically overwhelmed. Again, I'm not counting them out. And this isn't a shot at Sacramento. As a Kings fan, I just kind of have a sinking feeling that Sacramento is not going to get it done. And then Phoenix, I don't know about you guys, Phoenix doesn't really scare me at all. I just think they can't play defense. So ironically, I think the kryptonite for both of these teams is a matchup against each other. And it kind of seems like that's the collision course that we're headed on. So for both teams, I'd say it's LA Golden State.
I think it's LA for Golden State because of a lot of the reasons that I laid out earlier. And just to mention Phoenix, because I do think they're obviously a very talented basketball team. I just don't necessarily identify them as a tough matchup for a lot of people, because it feels to me like they are just very dependent on what level of shot making are we going to get from our stars. And generally, when I think about matchup, it's like, okay, what do you have that is going to make X team uncomfortable? And because of their lack of defensive grip, because of their lack of physicality overall, I don't think Phoenix is really going to shine there. It's going to be like, what level are our stars playing at and how is their difficult shot making? But I think it's LA. Again, I think it's the star advantage. I think it's the physical advantage. I do think Vando coming back is a real problem at the point of attack, just able to hassle Steph off ball. I think that we saw how effective their pick and roll coverages were with both him and AD against Steph last year in the playoffs. And so I think it's pretty clearly the Lakers who the Warriors want to avoid.
Yeah, I think it's the Lakers too. I think if in the event that they won a game against the Lakers, let's say that they get the 9 seed and they go to Oracle and they win, or they happen to upset them at Crypto, the team that I'd be most worried about if I was Golden State at that point is Dallas. Yeah. They have the interior size and length with Derek Lively. I go back and forth with Gafford and Lively, but I think in that specific matchup, I'd really like doing some of the stuff that a lot of teams have done against the Warriors, where you top lock and funnel and basically just count on Derek Lively to be kind of a deterrent at the rim, playing off of the non-shooters. So yeah, I'd probably lean towards Dallas in the event that they escape the Lakers, but I agree with you. To me, the Lakers are, when healthy with Jared Vanderbilt, the best team out of that play-in group overall, even including the Pelicans, just when they're actually healthy. But I think Jared Vanderbilt being out has made the Lakers look so physically overwhelmed on the perimeter. But like little things, like when Vando's in there, it just slots everything so much better. Now Austin Reaves is guarding the second best perimeter player, which is something he actually can handle as opposed to being in a struggle position. Jared Vanderbilt's one of their best defensive rebounders at the forward position. He's so much better offensively this year than he was last year, mainly because of the system that they're using. Like I think the Lakers are very much just in the pack right now. But when Vanderbilt's healthy, like they're legitimately, and I look at him more in that tier with the teams below Denver at the top when they're actually healthy. Moving on to the East plan, and we won't say as long on this one just because it's not as interesting and some of the stuff is more set. The 9 and 10 seeds are set. Chicago's at the 9. Atlanta's at the 10. That's most likely not going to change. We do have three teams tied at 31 losses, though. The Pacers with a 13th toughest remaining schedule, 51% opponent win percentage. The 76ers, a 20th toughest remaining schedule, 48% opponent winning percentage. The Heat, fourth easiest remaining schedule, 47% in opponent winning percentage.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings variant are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Does the craziness of everyday life leave you feeling stressed and shedding? Since having kids, have you started to see a little more of your scalp? Are you unhappy with your hairline? When it comes to thinning hair, there are many root causes at play, and Nutrafol addresses them through a multi-targeted, whole-body approach. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, and faster-growing hair with less shedding. Physician-formulated, with drug-free ingredients, Nutrafol supports healthy hair growth from within by targeting key root causes of thinning: stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism, through whole-body health. Take their hair wellness quiz at Nutrafol.com for a personalized hair health plan based on your specific root causes. With Nutrafol, building a hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription or doctor's visits required. Free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day, and you'll see results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker and healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code Hoops. That's H-O-O-P-S. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled N-U-T-R-A-F-O-L.com, promo code Hoops, H-O-O-P-S. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Hoops. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. It's something that I've always been a big believer in. When you try to take on a project that you don't know how to do, it ends up just being a bigger headache as you try to learn, and then you end up making mistakes, and it ends up just not being worth it. Not only can a professional get the job done more efficiently, but you're also supporting local businesses in your area. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job is done well. With 29 years of experience, combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects easy. Angie has cost guides to tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area. The app is free and easy to use. We all know the difficulties that can come with home projects. Angie makes tackling your project as simple as possible from start to finish. Turn to Angie with confidence, even for major renovations or emergency repairs. Are you renting? Even renters can come to Angie for moving, installations, and cleaning. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com, or download the app today. So on this one, what I'd like to see is, just for fun, and we'll start with you, Carson. What, with number one being Boston, two Milwaukee, three being Cleveland, what's your ideal set of matchups for the first round? Just as a basketball fan, what would you prefer to see in the Eastern Conference first round as the survivors from the play-in?
So I think there's potential for some pretty fun matchups here just because of the Heat doing their normal regular season routine where they have these brutal stretches. And obviously they had some injuries early in the year, but just being way down there in the standings. And then obviously Philly dropping far because of the Embiid injury. So I think there's a couple of dangerous first round draws for the top seeds. I would like to see Celtics Heat in the first round just because I think that would be a fantastic test for this Boston team. See how different they really are than previous iterations. And I think that they are, for what it's worth. I think they're significantly better than last year, but if anybody's going to make them uncomfortable, it's Miami. And I would just love to see that rematch. There's just a pretty fun history in recent years between those teams and these high stakes playoff matchups. Then I would like to see Bucks Sixers, and these are both very plausible. I mean, Miami and Philly are both in that play-in range right now. I just think that seeing Embiid Giannis would be a super fun first-round matchup. I think seeing what Tyrese Maxey could do against a Bucks point-of-attack defense that obviously still has its issues would be fun. I think seeing the Dame-Maxey matchup overall would be really exciting, and I think getting two of the top five players on the planet, two huge physical guys like Embiid Giannis, matched up, that would just be really exciting. And those are two really good teams. I think Philly's obviously much better than their seed this year. Then I have Cavs Pacers just as a sort of leftovers matchup. I think that Cleveland is pretty clearly better there. The Pacers have just been bumming me out ever since Hallie came back from the hamstring, just because he's not even close to the same player. So I loved watching him. I loved watching their offense early in this year. I think that he is still very much the future, but right now he's just limping through this season. And I'd like to see Siakam fit, but when he is nothing close to himself, when he can't get a step, when he's settling for all these brutally tough pull-up threes, like, the Pacers aren't that fun and they just aren't that good because they need that offense to be great. And then I have Orlando against New York, because I think that would be a really fun defensive minded matchup. That would be a kind of throwback series just in terms of the grittiness, the physicality. You have some big forwards in this matchup. If it's Franz, if it's Paolo, if it's Julius Randle, obviously OG Anunoby as a defensive counter. And I would kind of enjoy the defensive chess match between these two teams. And Orlando is a fun young team. I personally don't think they really have the offensive ceiling to make noise in this playoff run. I would definitely take New York. I think healthy New York is a really scary playoff team. But I think that would be an interesting matchup for both these teams. And I think it would just present some discomfort inherently by their play styles.
I think as long as Atlanta and Chicago get bounced, I think the first round's going to be awesome. As long as we can remove both of those teams, it's going to be a good time. I flopped on some of these. I think a rematch of Cavs-Knicks would honestly be really fun, seeing if Cleveland can make adjustments. And just the fact that New York, that battle of the interior guys, man, Allen and Mobley versus Robinson and Randall, Hardenstein, that was awesome last year watching those guys battle. Like, you talk about a throwback series. We kind of got it last year, and I'm honestly down to double down and get that again this year and see if Cleveland can make adjustments, if the Knicks can just go in there and handle business. I really like Philly versus Milwaukee. I think that – I mean, what Tyrese Maxey has done in the absence of Joel Embiid this season has been, like, astounding. I knew Maxey was great, but seeing him this year without having a guy to rely on like Embiid, Maxey's pull-up shooting, his command of the offense, the way he's controlled the game, I've been super impressed with him. So I think it would be an offensive showdown between them and Milwaukee. Obviously, I'm going to take Milwaukee if Embiid's not healthy. And then on the Miami point, I want to ask you guys, I think Miami matches up because they just got the Heat culture. I think they're better than last year with the improvement of guys like Triple J, Jovic. They add in Terry Rozier. Is it wrong of me to question if Jimmy Butler is going to be good to go for this playoff run? Like, it's rubbed me the wrong way that we haven't. And I know Jimmy and Miami do this every year, but Jimmy's just been so consistently out, like, you know, missing games. If it's, I don't know. Is it wrong of me to be concerned if Jimmy Butler is going to be good to go come playoff time?
Be my guest, man.
Our friend Ryan Brumley has always said that he hates Miami and Jimmy because they always take the regular season off, and it just makes them really difficult to evaluate in that regard. To which point, I agree.
Yeah. I don't know. Jimmy's been banged up year after year. He generally shows up in the playoffs and balls. I wouldn't be the guy to be throwing around a bunch of anti-Miami takes right now. And listen, I've been that guy. And I still am sitting here saying that they're probably going to lose first round. I mean, that'll depend on the matchup, but I think Jimmy's going to be fine.
So I obviously Boston Miami is the easy one. You just want to see that. That's a fun rematch. Milwaukee Philly, I understand the appeal there, and I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't enjoy that as a basketball fan. But part of me really, like, just for Embiid's sake, just hopes that Philly misses the playoffs this year, because, like, I don't want him to rush back and then look like a shell of himself and lose in the first round again, and then just further exacerbate the narrative surrounding him. Like, I think Embiid is eventually going to break through in a big way in the postseason, and I'd almost rather have him just sit out the rest of the season than manage his knee more diligently next year, stop worrying about regular season awards, and just get to April healthy, and then have him try to make a run at that point. But that said, obviously I'd have fun seeing Milwaukee Philly. In the event that Philly misses the playoffs, the team that I think would be really fun to see against Milwaukee as a fun first round opponent is Chicago. They have a plethora of perimeter defenders to throw at Damian Lillard to make work extremely hard. They have a lot of perimeter speed in general, which is a weakness for Milwaukee. their set of perimeter shot creators between guys like Kobe White and DeMar DeRozan, they would be comfortable most of the series going against Milwaukee's perimeter options. And then like Chicago with Andre Drummond and Nikola Vucevic, they actually have a decent amount of interior size, which I think would help in terms of the building of the wall type of stuff going on when you're trying to defend Giannis in a playoff series. So obviously I'd pick Milwaukee to win that series, but talking about a fun first round matchup, obviously that'd be a good one. Cavs Pacers, 100% with you on that front, although Cavs Knicks would also be a fun kind of like rematch type of situation. Halliburton, dude, like... I think I don't know about you guys. Have either of you ever had a hamstring strain?
I have not.
So I had one before I played in college. This was when I was very young. I was like 18, 19 years old. And I ended up re-injuring it a few times before it finally got healthy. And I like literally there was a lengthy stage where I just didn't trust it at all to like really take aggressive steps. And with Tyrese Halliburton, specifically when it comes to beating switches, he needs to take those like really aggressive long steps to get to his spots. And I just don't think he's in a good place physically right now. And I think it's starting to hurt his confidence, which is starting to hurt even his wide open jump shooting. And I like, I'm with you, Carson. I'm a big believer in Halliburton in the big picture, but he's just not close to form right now, which is unfortunate. And then Orlando, New York, like you could not script a better, just old fashioned 1990s ass kicking of a series that would just be a ton of fun. All right, moving on to the top of the conference though, I'm interested in kind of talking about Boston and Milwaukee as it pertains to the future, because both of these teams, with exception of a player option for Drew Holiday, which he may or may not pick up, we'll see. But both of these teams, their starting fives are more or less locked up for the next season and more for some of the other guys. So. With that being the circumstance, who has more urgency to win a title this year, Boston or Milwaukee? We'll start with you, Logan.
Urgency is an interesting word, because if you think that Damian Lillard is going to fall off next season, or if he's not going to turn this around, I'd probably say Milwaukee. That being said, I think it's interesting. I was talking with one of my friends about how long it takes like stars to gel with teams. And so I wonder if it's just a year of growing pains, right? Even LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh didn't get it done in their first year in Miami. And so I wonder if it's just a time thing. I think it's a personnel thing with Milwaukee, the fact that they don't have point of attack defense, that they don't have, you know, they got a lot of aging guys on their roster, that they're getting older. I also do think it's a chemistry thing and something that may improve with time. I think Boston has more pressure, but I think the team that needs to get it done more is probably Milwaukee with their aging superstars. That being said, I don't really see a path for Milwaukee. I've kind of been off Milwaukee for a while. I think it would take a serious injury to another team. I honestly think the Knicks are probably my second favorite team in the Eastern Conference, including Milwaukee. I would say urgency-wise, I think there's probably more pressure on Milwaukee just because they have so many older guys on their team that, you know, I could see Brooke Lopez taking even a further step back. I could see Damian Lillard maybe taking another step back next season. I'd say urgency-wise, you know, Boston's younger. There's a ton of pressure on Boston, man, because they keep hitting their freaking head on the ceiling, man. And it's you keep wondering, like, when are they finally going to break through? You know, 2018, you go seven games in the Eastern Conference Finals against LeBron. 2020, you lose in six to the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. You collapse in the NBA Finals against the Warriors in 22, and then Miami slams the door in your face again. And so, you know, it's frustrating, and I think there's a lot of pressure mounting for Boston, but they're not going anywhere. They've got a culture. They've got the players locked up. They've got a ton of talent. They're going to be back here probably the next couple seasons. So I think Boston has more pressure, but I think there's got to be a lot more urgency for Milwaukee, man. They're just older, and I mean, I can see this, and I didn't even mention Middleton. You know, Middleton's another guy with health concerns, with aging, with him potentially losing a step. It's just, I can see Milwaukee definitely nosediving after this season. Boston's probably a perennial contender. Despite how frustrating they are, they're going to be back.
There's definitely more urgency for Milwaukee. They're just in a much more precarious position. They've gone all in on this core, comprised mostly of dudes who are in their early and mid 30s outside of Giannis, who himself is still 29. I mean, he's not as young, obviously, as Jason Tatum as the cornerstone. And there are legitimate basketball flaws here that they have not been able to reconcile up to this point with the point of attack defense, the Dame thing. Logan, you talk about if it's fit. I absolutely think that that is a factor. I think that we still have not seen Dame and Giannis unlock the potential that they have with their two-man game. I think that there's still a really high ceiling there, but there's just a bit of synergy and feel between the two of them that they haven't totally tapped into. And just the volume at which they run Giannis Dame pick and roll has not been high enough, in my opinion. And so then you have Dame running a bunch of pick and roll with Brooke Lopez, and it's very stagnant, and you know that he's popping every single time. And so Dame's shot quality has gone down. I think if he were running more pick and roll with a legitimate rim threatening athletic big, that would just be better for everybody involved. I also think Dame has lost a bit of a step this year, though. I think in terms of quickness, and he's getting to the rim at a career low rate. Like, he's been on a really good stretch these last three games, and I think he's capable of exploding. But this is not the Damian Lillard that was advertised. This is not the Damian Lillard that we saw last year, who had maybe the offensive season of his career. And so that's just frightening when you consider that's what you've gone all in on. And that was supposed to be like the miracle drug. That was supposed to be the thing that would solve everything, fix your half-court offense. And from that point, your backline defense is good enough. You're going to contend. You have Dame and Giannis. You have the best duo on the planet. If that formula isn't great enough, then Milwaukee's in a really tough spot, because the rest of this roster just isn't even close to up to par with what Boston has. Boston has this team of super soldiers, man, this starting five that is just unfair, and they are younger, and they are healthier at this point. Like, I'm more worried about Chris Middleton being healthy for a playoff run than Kristaps Porzingis, and he's older, and Milwaukee's just slow because of their age. So, yeah, there is definitely more pressure on Boston in the sense that, hey, you guys are overwhelmingly talented. You are the team that hasn't done it yet. Milwaukee, albeit with Jrue Holiday instead of Damian Lillard, like, most of these core guys have gotten a ring. But if you are talking about actual circumstantial urgency, like, if you guys don't do it this year, you're going to have to start asking some big questions. Like, maybe Boston would be so disappointed that the city eats itself alive and they burn down Boston, then that's a problem. But we know that they could come back next year and still be the most talented team in the league. And Milwaukee doesn't have that luxury.
Yeah, the way you both put it is perfect. I would say Boston has more pressure and Milwaukee has more urgency. The pressure basically just meaning Boston is expected to win. And so if they don't, there's obviously a certain level of, like, backlash that will come from every basket. Like, Boston's in a position where, like, if they don't win it this year, no one will ever believe in them until they actually hoist it. They could be up 3-2 in the NBA Finals and no one would believe it until they actually hoisted the trophy. The breakdown of the ages of the starters that Carson kind of went over is something that I think a lot of people don't realize. Like, as of next year, all five of Milwaukee starters will be in their 30s. And this is a team that already has a certain amount of a lack of foot speed, and like, even Giannis is starting to succumb to some injuries, which has become a little bit more prevalent over the last few years. This hamstring thing he's dealing with has been a little tricky, as he's been not as vertically athletic as we're accustomed to seeing with Giannis. So yeah, like, it's, in terms of the urgency, it really is that simple. You look at Boston, both of the Jays and Kristaps Porzingis are still firmly in the heart of their prime in their late 20s. As of next year, both Derek White and Jrue Holiday will be in their 30s, but they both look really good physically right now and are more or less reliable in that regard. And so, just with Milwaukee, to put it simply, there's just a shorter window. Even as you look at Boston, they're still improving. Jaylen Brown is playing the best basketball of his career right now. Jason Tatum is, since January 1st, in a 35-game sample size, is taking 6 pull-up threes per game and shooting over 40% on them. So all of those conversations, which, by the way, were legitimate. This is new information. We always have people that are like, oh, take back everything you said about Tatum. It's like, actually, he used to miss them. Now he makes them. It's a difference. but literally, for 3 years, Tatum was a high-volume pull-up three-point shooter and couldn't make them at a high enough clip. He was in the low 30s, and now he's hitting them at 40%. And so Tatum's getting better. Jaylen Brown's getting better. Kristaps Porzingis in the last 2-3 years has made significant leaps as a player. Derek White has gone from being, like, interesting young guard prospect to like a useful role player to like a borderline fringe star in terms of his overall impact on both ends of the floor. And then Drew Holiday is a fifth starter. You really can't do much better than that. And so Boston just has more room to grow. That's what's so funny is even if Boston loses this year, everyone will roast them. Everyone will have fun at their expense. And then they're going to be right back next year kicking everybody's ass again. On the Milwaukee front, though, I want to be clear. Even though they're under more urgency and even though they're not as good as Boston, there's a lot of encouraging stuff there as well. Like some of the issues with the two-man game you had mentioned, some of that has to do with the fact that as Dame is starting to kind of figure it out, Giannis has been dealing with some injury issues. Chris Middleton has been out of the lineup for a good chunk of this year, and now he's finally back. Damian Lillard, you mentioned it, Carson, back-to-back-to-back 30-point games for just the second time this season. But zooming in on it a little bit further, in his last 13 games on 9 3-point attempts per game, he's shooting 44% from three. So Dame has been in a good offensive rhythm. I've been seeing throughout the year enough to make me believe that this was less about decline and more about learning how to play with this particular group in terms of the geometry of the floor and just where his touches come from. And I think we're starting to see some of that come together. And so I think Milwaukee is still every bit as potent and capable as we thought they were to begin the season. It's just been a disappointing season because Dame was so bad for so much of it. And because honestly, the Adrian Griffin issue as well has to be factored in there. So I definitely think Boston has more pressure, but Milwaukee definitely has more urgency.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. It's something that I've always been a big believer in. Usually when you try to take on a project that you don't know how to do, it ends up just being a bigger headache as you try to learn and then you end up making mistakes and it ends up just not being worth it. Not only can a professional get the job done more efficiently, but you're also supporting local businesses in your area. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job is done well. With 29 years of experience, combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects easy. Angie has cost guides to tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area. The app is free and easy to use. We all know the difficulties that can come with home projects. Angie makes tackling your project as simple as possible from start to finish. Turn to Angie with confidence, even for major renovations or emergency repairs. Are you renting? Even renters can come to Angie for moving, installations, and cleaning. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com or download the app today. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Moving out west. So Nikola Jokic polishing up the jumper, getting ready for the postseason. Jamal Murray obviously has been playing at an all-star level. The Nuggets have lost just twice since the All-Star break, and both of those losses involved a last-second shot that either sent it to OT or ended the game. They have had multiple, probably about a half dozen, just ridiculous half-court ass-kicking sessions that they've put on at the end of games to put things away. Denver just seems like a freight train to me, and so I'm going to present this question to you guys like this, and I'll start with you, Carson. Would you take Denver or the field at this point to win the NBA title?
It's a really good question. I would probably take Denver. but I don't think there's a big gap between them and Boston. I'm very confident that one of those two teams is going to win the title. I think that Boston is the most overwhelmingly talented. And I think that as a basketball team, they have the highest ceiling. With the level that Jaylen Brown has been playing at as of late, if you get Kristaps Porzingis consistently knocking down his shots from the perimeter, which he didn't really do when they played Denver and he was getting good looks there, just the overall athleticism that they have, the combination of perimeter defense and interior defense, the fact that they're a good rebounding team, they have two star shot creators. Jaylen's been balling. Jason's having a career season. They can go on these flame throwing runs from deep. They lead the league in 3-point volume and they're second in terms of their percentage there. So the ceiling that they have is incredibly high. I do still think that Denver is a bit more reliable though, because their offensive brilliance is truly inevitable. They are never going to break down in terms of process. They are never going to experience the swings in terms of perimeter shot making that, although Boston's ceiling is very high, we saw the difference maker in their matchup. And Boston fans may say, oh, well, we had a just miserable shooting game from deep, but so did Denver. Denver made 4 threes in that game. They could not knock down a shot from the perimeter, and they have one advantage that nobody else in the league does, which is that that offensive machine just keeps churning because of Nikola Jokic's interior dominance offensively, because of his ability to create quality shots in and around the paint for cutters, for Aaron Gordon in the dunker spot, Jamal Murray's mid-range shot making. Like, Denver is less susceptible to shot variance than anybody else in the NBA. They won two games in the finals last year where they made 5 3-pointers or fewer. Nobody else did that in the entirety of the postseason. Nobody else can survive off shooting nights like Denver. And by the way, they're a really good shooting team, but they don't need to be to win every single game. And I think that that's a huge advantage. I think they're a top three offense of this century. I mean, particularly in the clutch, the shot quality they can create with either a Nikola Jokic post up. Obviously, I think he's the best post scorer on the planet and the best scorer, period. And he can get to any of those touch shots and make 65% of them, no matter who's on him. But if you dig, he's going to create a good shot for a shooter. If you double from the paint, he and Aaron Gordon have maybe the best two-man chemistry that I've ever seen. And so there is an inevitability there. Whereas Jason Tatum, yes, has been on a really good pull-up shooting run, but you can see these stretches from Boston where the decision-making from Tatum and Brown isn't great, and they are susceptible to just down stretches in terms of perimeter shot-making. And Denver's a really good defensive team, too. I think that obviously, particularly on the perimeter, they have some good athletes. They're not a team that is at all easy to like pinpoint mismatches with. I think about that a lot, where you see it in the Mavs game recently, for example, where Luka is like trying to hunt switches and go at Jamal Murray late in that game. And it's still not super easy. Like, Jamal's still a 6'4 compact, pretty athletic guard. So I think they're underrated defensively and they're the best offense in the league. The offense that I trust the most by a good bit, but I just can't act like they are head and shoulders above Boston, because I know what Boston is capable of. Boston has the most talented starting five that we've seen, certainly since the peak Golden State Warriors. I think this is a team that in most post-Warriors years, like, would be better than the champion. I'm interested in your guys' thoughts on that, because I think Denver is the strongest champion we've seen since those Warriors. I think if you dropped this Celtics team against the 2019 field, well, Toronto, just because Golden State was hurt that year. The 2020 Lakers are tough, but the 2021 Bucks, 2022 Warriors, I think this Boston team is so overwhelmingly talented that I would take them against most of those teams. And I think that that's a testament to how strong both these teams are. I think that we are headed on kind of a collision course for one of the best finals of this century. I view both these teams very, very highly.
I'm taking Denver, and I agree with you. I think it's going to be a battle of the Titans. If the Celtics are the Avengers, Jokic is Thanos. And
nice.
To me, it comes down to one thing. Jason made a, I can't remember what take you made it about Jason. You were talking about how star players, their teams assume the identity of their star player. And I really think that that's what it comes down to with both of these teams. The Celtics leader is Jason Tatum, and Tatum is susceptible to bad pull-up shooting runs, settling for a lot of threes. And so that's what his team does a lot. And I'm not putting that all on Jason Tatum's shoulders, but by and large, they have assumed the identity of Jason Tatum. And there is no team more in the NBA that I think has assumed the identity of their leader than the Denver Nuggets. Jokic's impact his unselfishness not only creates open looks and open opportunities for his teammates, but it makes his teammates more unselfish. Like, watch a Nuggets game, and it will blow you away when you're watching Aaron Gordon kick it to MPJ, and MPJ will swing it, and it's just – it's beautiful basketball. Carson, you talk about them being one of the greatest offenses of this century. It's the most beautiful basketball. It's like the 2000s and 2010 Spurs. It's like the 2010s Warriors. The ball movement is unreal, and that's what it comes down to me. Like, the entirety of the Nuggets team has assumed – part of Jokic's identity is we're going to play unselfish, beautiful basketball. We're going to make that extra pass, and it's going to kill you. It's part in why the Nuggets are so infallible when it comes to clutch offense, because they are looking for that extra pass, because they are looking to play make for their team is just so unselfish because their leader is. And that's the beautiful thing about the Nuggets, and that's why I can't pick against them. I do think the Celtics are probably the most talented team we've seen since the Warriors, even with like the 2020 Lakers are probably the closest, but there's a depth advantage that the Celtics have that the Lakers don't have when you're comparing those teams apples to apples. So I don't want to undersell Boston, but what it comes down to me is the fact that both of these teams, you know, buy into their identity, their culture, their leader. I trust Denver's culture and their leader more. And I think it is permeated to the rest of the roster in a way that you seldom see with teams, man. Like, their unselfishness is unreal. And that's why that's ultimately why I buy in and can't bet against Denver. Also, the fact, like you mentioned, Carson, you got MPJ just banging nails on contested threes. Every one of their players has something that they can kill you with, man. If it's an Aaron Gordon dunker spot lob, if it's coming. I do think the Nuggets are inevitable, and I would really be surprised if they didn't win the title.
To be clear, I have Denver as my championship favorite, and I'm more confident in them now than I was even to start the season. I think they're just better than they were last year. I think they have more well-defined roles and more well-defined processes on both ends of the floor, even than Boston does, which I think allows them to kind of reach their ceiling more frequently than Boston does, even though I agree Boston's ceiling is higher. Carson, I thought the bit you did on their lack of reliance on variance was super, super interesting. That stat about the five made threes in the finals, that's absolutely crazy. And I mean, I think that reflected in the Celtics games. They got outshot by Boston in both games on jump shots in terms of jump shot efficiency. And both of those teams are good jump shooting teams. They're both top 10 jump shooting teams in the league by point per shot efficiency. And so, like, their ability to weather that kind of storm. And again, them, I think, like, one of the big ones too is just Denver knows exactly, like, their hierarchy in big situations. Boston can get a little bit finicky on that end, and they don't really know what they want to run, which I think is part of the reason why they get inconsistent. That said, winning four championship rounds is really, really hard. And even though I would pick Denver over the field in the Western Conference, I think once you throw in that Boston variable, I think that it's a lot to say Denver winning over anybody else as an option. And so even though I'm more confident in Denver than I have been at all this season, I still think like there's a less than 50% chance that they win just because of all of the variables that go into it. I will pick them in every series. I will pick them against Boston if they get to the finals. I agree with you, Carson. I think it's going to be an all-time great series. That said, I think there's obviously like just a ton of variance in the NBA. I mean, even just looking back to the simple fact that we haven't had a repeat conference finalist in the last 5 years just goes to show you the stuff that you can run into in a postseason series, not to mention the injury risk along the way. To like, it's just, there's just always a chance that maybe Jamal Murray will go down or Michael Porter Jr. will go down before you get there. And obviously, as we know, Denver synergy depends so much on all five of those guys being healthy. And so, yeah, I think Denver fans should feel very confident. But if I was, you know, forced to pick Denver or the field, I'd pick the field just because I think the field is all, unless you're picking like Tiger Woods in his prime to win a major, like it's hard to go against the field in these sorts of situations. All right, before we get out of here today, we're going to have a fun game. We're going to go rapid fire style. We're going to start with Logan. I'm going to give you, I have six of, I don't want to call it bad takes, because sometimes I think hot takes are good takes just for entertainment's sake. Let's call these takes that I vehemently disagree with. Okay. I've got six of them. What I want to do is we're going to go back and forth. We'll go rapid fire style. I just want you guys to give your initial reaction, like what your basketball mind screams when you see something like this, when you're scrolling through your phone in the morning over some coffee, like the spit take and then what comes next. All right. So Logan, you're up first. This is from the famous Hooper Twitter account, Ball Don't Stop. The three highest scoring players ever, meaning Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Karl Malone and LeBron James, wouldn't really be considered pure scorers, but their durability was insane and their scoring arsenal just worked so well and efficiently. They really outlasted everyone from their era and the era after their era. Logan, how do you feel about Karl Malone, LeBron James, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar not being considered pure scorers by the Hooper community?
I don't really know what that means. I mean, what? Mm-hmm. How do you score nearly 40,000 points or 40,000 plus points? The only guy I'd say is probably Karl Malone because he was a John Stockton merchant, but that's another conversation for another day. I mean, yeah, dude, like Kareem and LeBron just have two of the most unstoppable scoring skill sets of all time. LeBron with the fact that he's one of the greatest rim pressures and most unstoppable athletes ever. And then Kareem with just one of the most immaculate post games and shots of all time. So I don't really understand. I wouldn't consider them like pure scorers because they do everything else. But to not call them scorers is ridiculous. They're two of the greatest of all time. That's kind of ridiculous to me.
Yeah, totally unsurprising, though, coming from Ball Don't Stop especially. And I think that there is a large group of the basketball community who has a serious infatuation with basically the aesthetics of one-on-one
scoring. That boy nice.
And very little interest in the effectiveness. Logan said it well. Like, if you can't stop something, you can't stop it. What Ball Don't Stop said in that tweet about the effectiveness of it, that's what matters. What should define if somebody is a great scorer? I mean, pure scorer is such a nebulous term. Like, what does pure mean? That you also don't excel in the other aspects of the game? Like, is that something that we want to be lauding? Do we love Cam Thomas because all he does is take tough shots? And like, yeah, I like watching Cam Thomas when he's on. Like, you know, he's got a really shifty movement style and he's got a deep bag and he's a tough shot creator. But there's a reason that there's not a lot of teams banging on the door to get Cam Thomas. There's a reason that Jamal Crawford wasn't as good as he was fun to watch a highlight tape of. Like, these dudes who may have these awesome dribble combinations and maybe great difficult shot makers. Like, if you aren't getting to your spots, if you aren't making life easy on yourself offensively, and especially if you aren't doing the other things that matter in a basketball game, playmaking, defending, rebounding, etc., then you're just not going to be that effective in an NBA game. So I see this sort of thinking all the time. To me, it just doesn't make sense. Like, there is value in having a tough shot-making skill set, right? Like, if you are going to try to run clutch offense through Giannis Antetokounmpo, who may be a super effective scorer, you're going to have issues because if teams just fully commit to, hey, we're walling off the rim in this specific situation, he doesn't have the requisite counters. But for most of the game, I mean, he's just going to be able to get 30 efficiently because he has these unstoppable traits. And I think many people overvalue just how does it look when you score.
Yeah, I think it gets a little complicated when you're differentiating between the Giannis types and Agreed. Like the Agreed. LeBrons and the Kareem Abdul-Jabbars and the Jokic's, because it's like there is some truth to the fact that, you know, Giannis's lack of skill polish can become an issue when he gets into the half court, totally. Which is more complicated than just reading his point per game.
But he's a
numbers.
Better scorer than Jamal.
But yeah, like it really,
you know.
But for sure, yeah, no, you're that.
Ball Don't Stop wouldn't say
100%
that.
100% agree. The hilarious part to me about this tweet is the part that says their scoring arsenal just works so well and efficiently. And it's like, oh, so that's what a pure scorer is, isn't it? Like that's the literal definition. And then also, again, so much of the aesthetic appeal, like some of these guys, like LeBron, for instance, I think, honestly, LeBron's bag, so to speak, has been highly underrated over the course of his career. But also, like, bully ball is the most effective and reliable form of scoring when you get to the later rounds of the playoffs. That's just a fact. And lastly, before we move on, like, the funniest thing to me is, like, the 16 dribble combination pull-up jump shot is also, like, one of the hardest things to play alongside as a teammate. Like it's a rhythm disruptor. And what's so funny is like all these guys, the Karl Malones, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbars and LeBrons, their scoring came in a way that allowed other people to score well around them. And like, then you get these guys like Kyrie, or not Kyrie's more lumped in with just the way that Dallas plays. But let's talk about Luka, for instance. Like Luka, like you have to put play finishers around him, because if you put other guys who can dribble, shoot, and pass around him, they would never be in rhythm because they'd be watching Luka take 17 dribbles on every single possession. And so like what's so funny is the specific type of style of scoring that he is referencing here is probably the kind that is like least, it has a value, but it's less valuable than the other forms of scoring that exist out there. Okay, next one. This is not a quote, but it's come from several Miami Heat players, so I'm just going to kind of reference it vaguely. We'll start with you, Carson. A few Miami Heat players have said that Chris Bosh was the most important player on the Heatles because he was a stretch big, even though he was on the same team with LeBron James. What's your reaction?
Yeah, that's pretty hilarious. That's a classic case of people galaxy braining things and making things more complicated than they are. I don't really have a bunch to say. I mean, LeBron was clearly the best player on the planet in both Miami title years, and just an absolute fulcrum, both offensively and defensively. His versatility in Miami was the best of his career. His ability to play multiple styles. Like, I think the super heliocentric, ball dominant LeBron that we got in the second Cleveland stint, like his mastery of the game intellectually, was incredibly impressive. But his ability to play off ball as well in Miami with just that sort of freak athleticism. I mean, the best combination of his explosiveness from those first Cleveland years and his strength. And then he was at his defensive peak. I mean, LeBron was at one of the highest peaks we've ever seen from a basketball player ever. And so I'm very happy that Chris Bosh was able to stretch the floor. And obviously he was a very good basketball player, but you take LeBron off those teams, you see what happens like in the subsequent years. And obviously D Wade had diminished at that point, and Chris Bosh obviously had all of his health issues, but like they were an okay playoff team after LeBron left. And I think it's very obvious that they would not have been contending. And it's like giving Iggy the finals MVP in 2015. Sometimes we look at people maybe exceeding their value or doing one specific thing that is super valuable. Oh my God, he guarded LeBron and he shot the ball really well. And we want to reward that. But it's like, who would you not be with in the, who would you not be there in the first place if you didn't have? Well, maybe it's Steph Curry, the guy who completely changed modern NBA offense and drove all the Warriors' success on that side of the ball. So I think that's a very silly take.
I mean, credit to Chris Bosh for grabbing one of the most important rebounds in NBA history. But yeah, I just completely disagree with this one. I'll give Chris Bosh credit for doing another thing too. I think it's important too, when you have that accumulation of talent, when you have two bona fide guys who are maybe the best players on the planet, it takes sacrifice. You know what I mean? Chris Bosh had to sacrifice his role, his numbers, his view of, you know, his stance as a player in the league, legacy wise, to go win championships. That's what championships take. Sacrifice from guys, you know, taking the lesser role and doing that role to perfection. And I'll give Chris Bosh a ton of credit for doing that and being a really underrated player. I think he's probably underrated now, especially, you know, combined with the fact that he took a lesser role and the fact that, you know, his career was shortened because of blood clot issues. That's got to be one of the most hyperbolic takes or ridiculous. Like, what are we doing here, man? I mean, that version of LeBron's one of the greatest players ever.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, The cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.